Marie Osmond has spent almost all of her life in the spotlight, first as a member of the Osmonds family group, then as a solo performer. Americans watched her grow up on television shows like The Donny and Marie Osmond Show and, more recently, Dancing with the Stars. She writes about her very public life in her latest book, Might as Well Laugh About It Now. It's published by the New American Library, and I'm very pleased it has brought her to our show. Hi.
Hi. How are you, Leonard?
I'm okay. In your introduction, you say that your intuition has almost always made your life more fulfilling, but only in the long run. What do you mean by that?
Well, I think you intuitively do things, and you're not really sure why until after the manifestation of, you know, the effort you put towards it. But it's like a train track, and my mom always said that to us growing up, that it's bumpy and it jerks you around, but when you stand at the caboose and you look back, you go, oh, that's why it did that. Oh, that was the turn in the road. And I think that's the case, is you don't always know why at the time you do something.
Have you relied on your intuition for most of the choices you've made over your career?
I think that I would love to say yes 100% of the time, but no. A lot of it is hard work. A lot of it is just common sense. A lot of it is
somebody calling you and saying, Marie.
Exactly. And a lot of it, too, for 40 being 45 years in this business as a woman, a lot of it is you make your and create your own things. Children's Miracle Network, I'm one of the founders of it. That wasn't started because somebody called. It's because I've done so many different kinds of charity and all these wonderful causes out there, but they all have to be treated. And that's where I put into play Children's Miracle Network. And we help about 17 million kids a year. So those kinds of things you do because you want to give back. So it depends.
You have 8 kids.
I do.
And would you suggest any of them go into show business?
My oldest son is very, very talented. And he performed with me on when I did Sound of Music and shows like that. But he's an incredible writer, has a new album coming out. And I wouldn't tell any of them not to do it. I think that's their choice, and it has to be. So we'll see what they end up doing.
Was it your choice?
To be in show business? I think eventually it was. As a 3-year-old, do you think you have many choices? I don't think so.
Well, how did your parents decide to put their children into the music business? Were they inspired by the success of the Jacksons?
My brothers were before the Jacksons. The Jacksons, actually, Michael, we all knew each other in the 70s, and we'd hang out in the hotels and play football and, you know, whatever. But their father used to make them sit and watch my brothers on the Andy Williams shows. My brothers were very unique. I did a movie of the week a long time back on my family where I portrayed my mother. And when they were trying to find children that could sing at age 2, 4, 6, and 8, they couldn't find anybody. Still to this day, who compares to the sound that my brothers had. They've just had their 50-year anniversary tour. 50 years nonstop in this business, that's quite a feat. And so I don't know many people who have done that. But they had a very unique sound, and everybody told my father, you know, they should be doing it, and he kept saying no, but history showed otherwise.
He really was reluctant to put the kids into show business because he's been criticized for thrusting you into the business.
Well, isn't it nice to talk to the source? I can tell you the truth. Mm-hmm. But once we were there, he was very strict, and he said, look, if you're going to do this, then you better be the best, and you better work hard. And, you know, it's kind of funny, and I've said this in the book, that I grew up being an entertainer, not a celebrity. My parents wouldn't allow that. We kind of grew up in that older generation with the Frank Sinatras and the Dean Martins, and, I mean, I even worked with Groucho Marx. So, you know, not many people my age can say that. I mean, he was a dirty old man in a wheelchair, and he was pinching my butt, but I worked with him. And so I've been very blessed.
And what was the secret word?
Exactly. I'll tell it to you later.
You had to make sacrifices anyway, like not going to regular schools, not hanging out with kids your own age. In retrospect, do you feel all those sacrifices were worth it?
You know, Leonard, I think everybody sacrifices. I don't know. Did I have a normal childhood? Absolutely not. Do I have things that I wished I could have done? Absolutely. I make sure my children are as normal as possible. My parents did the same for us. I think if you look back, you never grow up. I think you have to make peace with your past. My joke is you spend the last half of your life fixing what the first half did to you. And that's why the book really... They asked me, because I came off another New York Times best-selling book, and I was the first celebrity to write about postpartum depression. It doesn't matter if it's postpartum. Depression is depression is depression. And they said, well, we want you to write another book. We want you to write an autobiography. And I said, I can't. I'm only half dead. And so... Even though I've had a very long career, that's why the short stories, because if I were to leave anything to my children, to my grandchildren, it's tragedy plus time equals humor. So you might as well laugh about it now.
Although, except for the postpartum depression, which you covered in the previous book, your life doesn't sound all that bad from this book. Did you leave some of the worst things out?
Well... This isn't, you know, I don't
believe
in tell-all.
There was a long pause there.
You know, I could sit here and I guarantee you what I would say. Somebody out there's had a worse life than me. You know, was I abused as a child? Yeah, I was. I wrote about that in my last book. I think that's why the manifestation of postpartum. Did I have, you know, I was verbally, physically, whatever. I mean, I was taken out into parking lots at age 15 and saying that I was an embarrassment to my family. And if I didn't keep food out of my mouth, that they were going to cancel the show. And if I ever told my parents, that they would deny it and call me a liar. I mean, just head trips, you know, just lots of things. Is it worth it to bring it up? Why? What's the purpose? This book is to show how some of those things that happened to me were really life-changing and really helped form what I felt were... real good reality checks.
When you were 10, your family had to live through a pretty fierce earthquake in California. You'd moved there from Utah. And you say that you carried two things out of the house.
Okay.
They were a toy and...
No, I carried a girdle.
A girdle.
That's what I took
so
out.
So the weight... How old were you at the time?
Well, I was, my brothers were on the Andy Williams show, and they were doing all these things every week. They were performing, tap dancing, playing banjos, whatever, ice skating. And there was a Christmas show. I was about 10 years old at the time, 9 and a half, 10. And I remember I was standing around the corner, and I heard just right around the corner a couple of the producers from the show. They said, boy, they're a fabulous family. I wish we could get rid of the ugly fat sister. And that's devastating to a 10-year-old, especially when all of your brothers have these beautiful eyelashes and I have to buy mine. And so, especially being the only girl as well. And so, you know, there were a lot of head trips. And I think the industry in general, being a celebrity, very visual, very weight conscious, very, you know, the whole Twiggy era was very popular in the 70s. And it's just, you learn as you get older with 8 children. That it's so important to really focus in on the interior. My weight loss, I've lost 45 pounds, actually 47 pounds now. Mine was done for health reasons. And
do you think your weight problems are genetic, or was it a form of self-medication that you ate more than perhaps you should have?
I think all of the above. I think our nation is in a weight crisis, not really because we want to be, but I think there are health reasons involved. I think genetically there are things, the kinds of foods we eat. You can't keep doing the same things and expecting, you know, different results. So I had to change my whole life.
Although some of the dieting that you experienced when you were trying to get your weight down for the Donna and Marie show sounds rather horrifying.
Extreme. Oh, absolutely. That's why this time around... You look at it from the perspective of a 49-year-old, and you say, my goodness, I don't want to starve myself. I don't have the energy to starve myself. And if I'm going to lose and keep it off, I can't hire a personal trainer and have him be my source. It has to be you. So I had to learn to actually what I did is I had to learn to eat again. I stopped eating. Or when I did, it was bad food, quick food, too much food. And as women, we take care of our husbands and our kids and our neighbors and our brothers and sisters and uncles and aunts and everybody in between. And we stop taking care of our own physical health. And my mother on her deathbed, I write about this in the book, she told me, can you imagine the last thing that your mother would tell you before she left this earth? Her only daughter. She said, don't do what I did. And that was being trapped in an unhealthy body. She said, you have the education, the tools, all available to you that our generation didn't. But she said, you're not going to do it if you try to force yourself to be skinny. You have to do it because you love yourself.
Elvis Presley admired your mother, didn't he?
Oh, my mother was awesome. Yes, he did. He loved her. Yeah. Well, she looked like his mother, and he didn't have her, so they would talk for hours and hours and hours, and man, I wanted to sneak in and see what they were talking about, but she wouldn't let us.
How did you wind up going into the business? Your brothers were already a success. Was it necessary for you to join them?
No, it wasn't. But my mother actually felt like I was... I have a very unique voice, Leonard. And maybe it's because my life has been difficult and in some ways. I mean, Dancing with the Stars, you mentioned that. You know, going back into that, during that period of time, my dad died. My son went into rehab. You know, I went through a brutal divorce, a couple other, you know, several things going on at the same time. I learned to be a survivor. You just keep plowing through things. But when I was younger, my mom said, you have the most unique voice of all of our kids. Through all of that, all the struggle of the marriage, everything, I kept doing what I loved, and that was learning my talents. So because of that, I sing Broadway music, I sing opera, I sing country, I do rock. We do that in Vegas in our show. And because of my mother, yes, I'm in this business because of her. Did I really want to be? I don't think I really wanted to be when I was a kid, but I knew I had abilities like my brothers.
And when did you realize that you wanted to be? The story
just
is
now.
That after coming on this show
right
and
here.
You realize it's so important to have this conversation with me.
When did you want to, Leonard?
To be in show business?
Did you want to paint, Leonard? Let's talk about you.
I wanted to paint when I was a kid, and I also wanted to be in show business. My mother was an actress.
Mm-hmm. I know she was.
How much research have you done on me? I've been researching.
I love people. I really do. But like your painting, did you always know you wanted to paint?
Yeah, and then I gave it up. And you were after the...
It's like in the book. I love country music, but I had to give it up.
Well, first you were going to give up show business altogether, weren't you?
And no.
What about that story that you would think of becoming a secretary?
Well, I'm good at that.
But that would be a real change from being somebody who is always in the spotlight to somebody who, I mean, a secretary is a rather anonymous person.
But is it really about being anonymous or is it about loving what you do?
And you liked being a secretary more than performing on the stage?
I take shorthand.
Pittman or Greg?
Greg.
Ah, okay.
Uh-huh. Simplified. Testing me, aren't you?
The things we find out on this show.
Isn't that funny? But, you know, what I loved it. I was the little terror in the box office. I mean, I would come in and they'd laugh at the 10, 11-year-old who could literally find one ticket missing. That was back when they had Deadwood. Now they do it all through computer analysis. But, no, I loved being good at whatever I did. I took pride in that. I learned that from my parents.
My guest is Marie Osmond, who's written with the help of Marcia Wilkie, Might As Well Laugh About It Now. It is published by New American Library. We will continue our conversation after this. We're back with Marie Osmond, who has written with the help of Marcia Wilkie, Might As Well Laugh About It Now, published by the New American Library. When the Osmonds as a family group were kind of pop, and then when you went on your own, you started singing country music. Is that something that you did to distinguish yourself?
Well, first of all, let's get
yourself?
Something straight here. It was the Osmond brothers. I came along and made it the Osmonds because I'm the only girl. No.
Yeah.
They started out singing Barbershop, and then they recorded pop, and actually one of their songs, Crazy Horses, was considered rock. But I started out before Donnie and Marie recording. I had Paper Roses. I was 12 when I recorded Paper Roses, and then had hits on my own like My Little Corner of the World and those songs.
Paper Roses with Jim Reeves? Or who's that?
Paper Roses?
Yeah.
No, it was...
Doesn't matter. I'm sorry.
Okay. You got me there. But anyway, I recorded Paper Roses and then had hits on my own. Then Donnie and Marie started to record together and had songs like It Takes Two, Leaving It All Up to You, those kinds of songs. We hosted, remember the Mike Douglas show?
Mm-hmm.
And that's where Fred Silverman saw us and put us on air as the Donnie and Marie show, the variety show in the 70s. And then we recorded pop. But I always started out country.
I was surprised to learn that you have two older brothers who are deaf.
Uh-huh.
Were they totally excluded from the family venture?
Well, they couldn't sing.
Yeah, but did they go along? I understand that. Did they go along on the tours? Or did they stay at home while everybody else was off?
They did both. Back then, it was really kind of interesting. You know, they used to institutionalize hearing impaired children. And my mother wouldn't hear of it, so she made sure that my brothers both speak incredibly well, even though they're 95 and 85% deaf. But no, they did stay back at certain times because they were at that place in their education, and they would stay with my grandparents, who were both educators. My grandfather was a principal. My grandmother was an educator, to make sure that they had their schooling, because it was a very different kind of schooling they had.
How many siblings did you have?
I have eight brothers.
So, and then you wound up having eight kids of your own.
Uh-huh. So, yeah, eight is enough.
Well, they didn't stop with eight.
16 you were the to ninth. Raise is plenty, trust me.
You obviously like kids.
I do.
And that's from two marriages?
Yes, uh-huh. One from my first and seven from the second.
How did you manage to handle motherhood and still have a career? Because you were doing the television shows, and then you did... You had a talk show. You've been on Broadway.
Mm-hmm.
You've done a lot of different things.
Well, you know, it's how do women do it now? I was on the airplane flying out here last night, and there was a stewardess who, a single mom, and, you know, you just learn to handle it. And, you know, what is it now? 70% of our homes are now single-parent homes. So it's one of those things that it's a challenge. I know that I have four older children. I took a break, had four younger children, and I'm raising my four younger children a little bit differently than I did my four older one. I think
the older ones always resent that, you know. That.
Well, you know, they say that you're easier on the younger ones. It's actually opposite in my family. I think because I worked and really have always been the sole, you know, breadwinner of the family, there's a lot of guilt that is attached to that being a woman. You feel like, oh, my goodness, I need to be with my kids. And when you're with your kids, you think, oh, I got to go finish my work. And so you tend to entitle them just a little bit, you know, spoil them. My goodness, I would have so appreciated that, getting some of the things that I had given them growing up. But I work 17-hour days. And, you know, I think, you know, my children now, they get $7 a week and they earn it. You know, they have to, you want to live in my house, then you have to be a part of the team, just like I was.
How much of that comes out of your growing up in the Mormon church? Do they encourage being strict parents?
No, to me, you know, it's the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. I think it's like any Christian religion. I think it's all based upon principles of logic and boundaries. And the Mormon faith is, I definitely was raised to believe in God. And, you know, definitely it's nice to have that higher power to run things by and to keep a check and balance for yourself.
When you turned down the role of Sandy in Greece, was it because of moral concerns or because your intuition was at work?
To me, that was more of a choice that I made. And you have to remember, when I received that script, it was much more heavy-handed on Sandy's part. And obviously, when I told them that I wanted it softer, they said no, and so they went on. But I guess the women kept saying we want it softer, and then, of course, Olivia Newton-John did it. But I don't know. I really never believed. I grew up in the 70s where I fought to be considered an equal, you know, in a man's world. And to have to always be the female that submitted and became, you know, the boy toy, I just didn't see it. I couldn't go that way. And that's my choice. I just decided that I didn't want to have to tell my girl someday that they had to succumb and be whatever the guy wanted. Because, sorry, I have eight brothers and I haven't succumbed to a thing they wanted.
But you are an indulgent parent. Did you allow one of your daughters to get a tattoo when she asked for it? I know you have two tattoos.
You read my book, bless your heart. No, I don't have any tattoos. When I told my daughter, what I said in the book is, I think you have to be at a certain age where you can be responsible for the things that you do. And I made them wait until they were 18, and then she went out and got one. Mm-hmm. But I couldn't say no to her because I tattooed on my eyeliner. It was a beautiful thing. You wake up and you're ready to go.
You never have to do eyeliner again.
No, you don't. It's fabulous. But, I mean, it wears off. But that was the point of the book is you really, children, they try to grow up too fast. I mean, I know I grew up very fast. But without the support system around and everything else, you know, make sure that the choices you make, you realize the long-term consequences. And that was the purpose of that chapter.
How did you wind up on Dancing with the Stars?
Oh, they came to me, and I sat around with my girlfriends, and I said, okay, look, I'm overweight, I'm winded, I can't do this. And they actually told me that, you know, you have 8 kids, you're going through a divorce, this is going to be, you know, impossibility for you. And I looked at all of them, and we all looked at each other and said, great, I'll do it.
And mostly, you proceeded to lose a lot of weight.
Well, you know, I never believed in crawling into dark corners. I always believed in climbing mountains. Caves aren't for me. And I felt like it was a great thing to say, look, I'm 20 years into a marriage that I just said goodbye to. You know, life is a struggle, and every woman my age is going through the same thing. So I went on the show more to just say, I don't care how old we are. You know, our industry says that our careers are over at 25, and I'm here to say baloney.
Although you had danced as part of the act, so you
no, I was not a dancer. No, no, no.
So did
In
you
the
have
70s, I was a finger pointer. We just
let
kind
the
of
grooved
and pointed our fingers up and down, exactly, in our arms.
So did the show require a lot of training?
Honey, you have no idea.
You once fainted on the show, didn't you?
You think? What is there, like 6,000 YouTube places you can go to find Osmond memorabilia? And that one, what is it like? What do they call their, like, my brain just went dead. Anyway, it gets millions and millions of hits, but there's like...
To watch for you faint.
6,000 pieces, and my fainting one is like the number one download, so...
You had to wear a lot of makeup on that show, didn't you?
And the question would be, why did you ask that?
I don't know. My staff actually wrote, ask her how much makeup she had to wear.
Well, I think on that show, they put on a lot of glitter and things like that because it's kind of the dancing thing. Not makeup. Maybe what they're thinking about is the spray tan story I told in the book. Mm-hmm. And I was staying at a girlfriend's house. I've known her since I was 10. And it got to the point that she had to get me a pair of white sheets because every time I go to the spray tan, it looked like I'd slept in a bag of Cheetos. And so, because I was orange. But, yeah, the spray tan experience on that show was unique.
Mm-hmm. And that was part of the deal?
Well, it's what you do. I mean, you're standing out there. Let's just say it this way. Tan bodies, even Cheeto tanned orange bodies, look better than white on camera.
Are you planning to do any more Broadway?
If I were to say that I had a real passion, I would say I love Broadway the best. Although I have a new inspirational album coming out. It's actually my first. And I would love to perform at the Met before I die. Before I leave this planet, I would love to do that. In the show in Las Vegas, I do P.E. Ajou. I do a few pieces like that because people haven't really heard me sing that way. And I would
have
say,
you had that kind of training?
Oh, yeah,
training?
Absolutely. When I did Sound of Music, some of the nuns on the show who were, you know, trained operatic singers, they got me into it. And I realized that I was a full-on soprano, which was shocking to me. And actually, I would say out of all the styles of music that I sing... it's the most challenging and yet probably one of the most fun.
Marie Osmond's book, her latest book, I can say that.
Yeah.
Is Might As Well Laugh About It Now, written with the help of Marcia Wilkie and published by New
Marcia,
American Marcia,
I met Marcia during the Donnie and Marie shows. She was our head writer. And when I had my book on postpartum depression, she remembered things that I couldn't because I was in the heat of depression. And we had so much fun on that book that when the house burnt down, my house burnt down in 2005, 2006, yeah, whatever it was. I lost 30 years of journals, fabulous stories. And I said, Marcia, you got to help me write these things down so I can leave some of these. Well, I still remember them to my children. Well, she went off and sent it to William Morris, my agent, and he went off and sent it, and that's how this book happened. So it was just kind of a fluke. So it's her fault.
Well... I guess we should be blaming her for it, but I think that was quite nice. And I want to thank you so much for being on our show.
Well, it's a pleasure.
Marie Osmond will be reading and signing books tonight at 7:30 at the Barnes & Noble store in Smith Haven Mall in Lake Grove, New York. Up next, Chaza Bodine looks back at growing up as the child of imprisoned left-wing radicals in Chicago and explains what led him to leave school and travel through Latin America. Also wanted to invite you to our next free film screening. It's tomorrow night, and we will be watching Gold Diggers of 1933, filled with classic Busby Berkeley choreography. I don't know if Marie Osmond had to learn any of those dance steps. It'll be at the Galapagos Art Space in Brooklyn as part of our...
You forget. I'm back in the days of variety television, dear.
Well, we want... We want that overhead camera with you doing those things with the legs and becoming a flower.
We did that with our ice skaters. Remember the old, oh my goodness, what was the show? Way to the Moon. What was his name? Alice to the Moon.
Jackie Gleason.
Jackie Gleason show. Thank you.
The June Taylor Dancers.
There you go.
And for tomorrow night, seating is limited, so RSVP now by going to our show page at WNYC.org. This is WNYC and WNYC.org.